The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. Shavua Tov, Moed Tov, all of the good things. How are you doing? How was Pesach?
Okay, Tov, Shavua Tov, Moedim Lesimcha. Pesach has definitely warmed up in every possible sense of the word, and it's going well so far. The thing that I was very fascinated to read about as weather warms up in Israel and we head towards summer is this new initiative in Tel Aviv called LumiWeave. This is a special type of canopy that's currently being tested out in Atidim Park, which is a business park area just on the outskirts of Tel Aviv. And this is a system that's been designed by a Tel Aviv-based industrial and product designer, Anai Green. And she's designed these canopies called LumiWeave, which are made of a special soft material that also has photovoltaic cells embedded in the fabric, solar organic photovoltaic cells. So during the daytime, this canopy offers shade, but at nighttime, you obviously have the ability to light up the street as well from the same same thing. And apparently, these cells can take, obviously, they get charged up by the sun, that they can continue to shine at night even with 3 days without direct sunshine. And obviously, Tel Aviv was something like 300 sunny days a year. It's just perfect for Tel Aviv. It requires no electrical infrastructure, so it saves on those costs. And, of course, it's very environmentally friendly. And this is a system that's being tried out at the moment in Atidim Park, but with the idea of potentially using it elsewhere in the city to provide both shade during the day and lighting at night, which I think is a fantastic idea. And it goes alongside the Israeli government's initiative, which was decided a few months ago, to plant 450,000 trees in urban areas across Israel in order to provide shade and to help cool the temperatures as we expect climate change to kick in more and more. And this is obviously a climate-based initiative. So something new coming out of Israel in a slightly different direction this
time. And when you think about the possibilities, it's just really phenomenal. So we'll keep an eye on that space. The other space, of course, that we can't avoid is unrest again yesterday. That was on the Temple Mount in the old city of Jerusalem. I'm still in Jerusalem today. For a few days later today, but it's palpable. The tension in the area is very, very apparent.
And particularly today, because we have that massive event, which is the Birkat HaKohanim, the priestly blessing, which will take place at the Western Wall today, the Kotel. This is something which happens every Pesach and every Sukkot, and is going to be the first fully fledged Birkat HaKohanim to take place since the corona lockdown. And so obviously a lot of tension in Jerusalem. Yeah, the events yesterday were very, very significant indeed. The Temple Mount has been opened up to Jewish visitors for 3 or 4 hours each morning during Chol HaMoed of Pesach. And so Jewish visitors are officially allowed to ascend the Temple Mount between the hours of 7 and 10:30. I think that's the official times that have been given. And yesterday, there was certainly a gathering of people, of Muslim worshippers on the Temple Mount, effectively awaiting the arrival of the Jewish visitors. And so the police were forced to push the Muslims back from a certain area as Jewish visitors ascended the Temple Mount. We understand that something like 700 odd Jewish visitors went up to the Temple Mount yesterday. But in the process, police actually went into the Al-Aqsa Mosque and again found stones and all kinds of weapons that were being used to throw towards security forces and towards other people visiting the area. There were also scenes of stone throwing across Jerusalem against buses in the area of the Old City. And also there were actual physical attacks that were carried out in the streets of the Old City against Jews by Muslims and in that area. So very much a tense situation right now. And of course, with the thousands of people who are expected to descend upon the Western Wall Plaza today, later this morning, for the priestly blessing ceremony. There is a great deal of tension. There were accusations yesterday that the Temple Mount was being separated and divided because of the fact that the police were pushing back the Muslims away from where the Jewish visitors were trying to ascend the Temple Mount. There were accusations that the Israeli police were trying to separate out the Temple Mount, keeping part for Jews and part for Muslims. That's not really the case. I mean, it would, of course, be ideal for everybody to be able to mix together in peace and a respect for each other. But unfortunately, at this stage, with all the tension that's going on, that doesn't seem to really be possible. And hence the idea that the police have had to separate this area out for the Jewish visitors. And of course, yesterday, the Ram Party, which is the United Arab List, which has four seats in the current ruling coalition, announced that it was freezing its participation in the coalition in the Knesset as a result of the police violence against Palestinians in Jerusalem, quote unquote. And of course, even though the Ram Party, which is very, very crucial to the current ruling coalition, let's not forget that the ruling coalition has been reduced in any event to only 60 seats and doesn't really have a governing majority as things stand. So the withdrawal of those four seats could be very, very significant. However, it is quite noticeable that their announcement was that they simply froze their participation and they didn't withdraw from the coalition. The idea being, as soon as the violence subsides on the Temple Mount, that they will then unfreeze their participation. So this seems to be kind of the most minimum action that the Ram Party could take in order to satisfy its own electorate.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, exactly. But they haven't withdrawn. They've simply taken the advice of the Shura Council, which is the religious council that is an advisory body to the Ram Party, and they've frozen their participation. I think that, as I say, this is just a minimum kind of action, but they were forced to do it just in order to stay on the right side of this current discussion. Of course, we've also had King Abdullah of Jordan weighing in, making a request of Israeli police to withdraw from using action and violence on the Temple Mount. We've also had comments from President Erdogan in Turkey. We've had comments from the U.S.
Anthony, this is my question. This is something that I'm finding a little confusing. We've had a lot of progress in terms of international relations, especially with Israel and its neighbors, UAE in particular. It's certainly, even Turkey, it's all moving in the right direction. Maybe I'm subject just to Israeli news, but it's very, very clear from my own perception that there's a group of extremists here from Hamas, from ISIS, or whoever it's from, that are disrupting prayer on the Temple Mount. And they're disrupting prayer not just for Jews on the Western Wall, but also for other Muslims who just want to go pray and worship. And yet there's still this almost knee-jerk response that condemns Israel for the, in inverted commas, storming of the mosque, whereas there's been no storming. There's been really very, very little of that. But yet that's the sort of the standard line. Surely in this case, we would expect to see something different, where we would see some of these nations and some of the Arab leaders from the Arab world, from the Muslim world, saying, hold on a minute, you know, this is a small group of extremists disrupting, come in line. What am I missing with that? Am I being just totally naive?
I think there are two things at play here, Howard. As I've said quite a number of times before, the Temple Mount is a subject which nobody can encroach upon in a public way. So not even the United Arab Emirates, which has really established a very, very close working relationship with Israel over the past year or two, can publicly condemn any Muslim action on the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount is kind of out of bounds in terms of criticizing any Muslim action that goes on in the Temple Mount. The protection of the Temple Mount, the protection of Al-Aqsa, is kind of primary in the Muslim world, and nobody would dare make a public statement against anybody other than those Muslims who are taking action on the Temple Mount. Public statements. Privately, there is a massive amount of work going on in order to get rid of these little factions who are clearly trying to force the Muslim world to make these public statements. So they know that if they can get a little bit of action going on the Temple Mount, they're going to force the Muslim world to make even slight little supportive statements because it happens to be taking place on the Temple Mount. Nobody can speak out against the Temple Mount under any circumstances, but we can absolutely understand that behind the scenes there would be a lot of work going on by the UAE, by other interested parties, to try to weed out that band of thugs, of troublemakers, of incitors to violence, who are forcing the hand publicly of the Muslim world to make these statements. That's really what's going on. On the one hand, publicly they're forced to do something. Privately, it's a very, very different situation.
Right. And obviously that is the difficulty. It's trying to determine what is public and what is private. It's fascinating. And I guess it's very difficult to try and figure out.
As we can see, the King of Jordan is forced every single time there's an incident on the Temple Mount, he's forced to make a statement, whether he wants to or not. He has no choice because he is the chairman of the Waqf, which is the religious council that rules over religious sites in Jerusalem. And the moment there's any incident on the Temple Mount, he has no choice but to make a public statement about it.
Okay, that does give it some interesting perspective. Iran has admitted to attacks against its nuclear reactor plants. This is really the first time, I think, that they've done so.
This is really a big move on Iran's part to acknowledge things have been going on within their nuclear industry, and they use the term terror attacks. They wouldn't, of course, acknowledge that Israel might have been responsible, although under different circumstances, they would accuse Israel of becoming involved in trying to do things. But Iran has a double-edged play in this particular aspect, because on the one hand, they would like to accuse Israel and to point fingers at Israel immediately. On the other hand, they don't want to give Israel the credit for being able to get in so deep into the nuclear industry in order to cause some of the chaos that's been caused. And so what Iran has officially confirmed is that it's been forced to relocate certain of its centrifuge facilities to the underground Natanz nuclear site, which we know is that site which is buried under the mountain and which we've also heard has been the subject of certain strange goings on. When we talk about Iran, Chechnya, Mezuzah, some of those events have taken place at Natanz as well from inside. But this is really the first acknowledgement that a place like Karaj is not safe enough against attacks that have been carried out by so-called terrorists, and that certain of the facilities have been moved to Natanz, and others have been moved to a site called Isfahan, which is also apparently a little bit more secure. So for the very, very first time, you're right, I haven't seen Iran acknowledge this before. They've acknowledged that certain of their facilities are not safe enough, that they're not secure enough against so-called terror attacks, and they're being forced to move things around, not only the centrifuges themselves, but apparently certain workshops that are producing parts and hardware that are being used by the nuclear facility. They seem to also be cooperating a little bit more, or at least to be seen to be cooperating a little bit more with the Vienna-based international Atomic Energy Agency, which supposedly has certain rights to monitor action that's happening within the nuclear facility. But my main concern, of course, is that while the eyes of the world are all on Ukraine, Iran is kind of doing its own thing without much supervision, without much reaction. And of course, Israel is being forced to watch that separately from what's going on in Syria, from what's going on within Ukraine, still welcoming Ukrainian refugees. Another 85 New Orleans arrived from Ukraine. Those entitled to claim citizenship under the law of return arrived over the weekend. So Israel has got a lot of work going on right now. And I think that Iran is a little under the radar in terms of what it's able to do. But it was very interesting that they were willing to make this public statement that some of their facilities are just not up to standard in terms of security and are open to attacks and have, in fact, been subject to attacks in the past.
very, very significant. Finally, Russia has summoned Israel's ambassador for a dressing down. I imagine this was following Yair Lapid's condemnation of Russia and support of them being removed from the UN Human Rights Council.
That's exactly right. Last week, Israel actually voted in favor of removing Russia from the United Nations Human Rights Council. That vote not taking place at the Human Rights Council itself, because, of course, Israel has withdrawn from the Human Rights Council, but the vote being held at the United Nations General Assembly. Israel had no issue this time in actually voting in favor of the removing Russia. And slowly but surely, we've seen Israel's stance on Russia hardening. Initially, when the prime minister was very much involved in trying to broker a ceasefire between Ukraine and Russia, the Israeli government was much less inclined to take a hard line against Russia. That has slowly but surely evaporated and culminated last week in Yair Lapid's very, very strong condemnation of Russia, calling some of the actions that have taken place in Ukraine war crimes. So he really called a spade in that particular statement. Now Israel's ambassador to Russia was yesterday summoned to appear today at the Russian Foreign Ministry for what is supposed to be a dressing down for Israel's participation in that particular vote. I'm not sure that this really signals a big change in Russia's relationship with Israel or Israel's relationship with Russia. I think that this is kind of one of the minimum things that Russia could do, which is to dress down the ambassador and just to call them in and tell
him. Yeah, it's back to the same conversation about window dressing and public view of things.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think that there are some Israeli officials who are a little surprised that the Israeli ambassador has been called in today. They thought that what happened last week kind of was last week's problem and was left behind, and we've moved on since then. Mm. But I think that this is just a minimum reaction on the part of the Russian government. Right now, I'm not sure that Russia is looking to create more enemies than they already have. So I don't think that they're looking to try to break relations with Israel or to create a flashpoint. But I think they do need to be seen to be responding to what happened last week.
Absolutely right. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow, where we'll follow up on the latest news from Israel.